we're seeing the miners really, really become very undervalued in relation to the gold price. I mean, in 2017, in January, the gold price was under $1,200, and we have a gold price of over $1,300 now, and the GDX is trading at the same price it was at that time.
Welcome back for another expert interview. I'm sitting here at PDAC with Nick, the mining book guy, and the junior miner junkie himself, David Earthley. David and Nick, thanks for joining me today.
Thanks for having us, Bill.
Thank you very much, Bill.
And David, it's a pleasure to meet you in person. I've been a subscriber to your newsletter, and Nick and I have joined together to team up on you to ask the professional questions of how to better be successful in mining stock investing.
No pressure, right?
No pressure, none whatsoever. Nick, you're a big guy on jurisdictions and finding new jurisdictions to make money in. How about you begin by asking David some of your questions as it relates to specific mining jurisdictions to invest in?
Sure. It's interesting because I tend to focus on riskier, more exotic jurisdictions. And I know that David's had quite a bit of success with, you know, the safer, you know, or consider jurisdictions that people are more open to in Canada, North America, you know, just being staying in this area. But I know that at one point, David was more open to investments in Africa and maybe Latin America. And I wonder, you know, David, like, where are you now on that? Are you, is it completely off the table? Or are there a few jurisdictions outside of North America that you're more open to right now?
Well, I wouldn't say Latin America is completely off the table for me. I really like Peru. I like the Puno region of Peru. And I really like Mexico, and but I have soured on the riskier jurisdictions in Africa. I used to like Burkina Faso a lot. They raised the mining taxes there. But still, that's not completely off the table. There is one project there that I really like. There's a new management team in it. That's Orezone. As a new management team has taken over a very successful one, and they're looking to fast track that one a little more. And I am open to investing in that if the share price gets a little lower. Right now I feel that there's just too much undervaluation in the less risky countries right now, in the less risky jurisdictions, to even bother with messing with anything even slightly risky right now.
Oh, it's a good answer, and it actually leads more into some of the differences in our investing styles, because I'm really big on greenfields exploration. Mm-hmm. And despite what you saying being completely correct, I still feel strongly that there's a lot of dirt cheap greenfields exploration opportunities in emerging jurisdictions. And on top of that, there's a higher likelihood of finding a tier one huge asset. And so I wouldn't want to, you know, push you in that direction per se, but I do wonder if you feel for the ideal portfolio, whether more, you know, newer investors should be open to maybe having as little as 1-2% of their money in these smaller greenfields exploration plays that are in riskier jurisdictions. Mm-hmm. If you think that it's worthwhile.
Well, the key part of your question there, Nick, is newer investors. So the more green they are, the more difficult they're going to have in a risky jurisdiction. Sure. So I would have to say no to that question.
That's fair. That was a simple answer. Well, and I'll just add, yeah, I do a lot of research, and I try to tell newer investors that they can too, but it's always going to be a small subsection, you know, of the investing population. So I do think if people want to go for those grand slams, you know, the best place to look are some of the emerging jurisdictions with greenfields exploration. But I think David hit the nail on the head for most newer investors. Your portfolio is a good place to start.
Thank you.
David, have you taken a look at Asia recently? You know, Japan, Fiji, places like that. Have you taken a serious look over there?
I really like a company in Fiji. I like Lion One, but the project is very small. I really like the management team. The CEO has made me money in previous takeovers that he's been involved with. So I've followed that company for quite a while. Now they've tied up some more land there, and it's right next door to a very big producing mine. But I just don't feel the project is big enough yet. But I do, like I said, I do like everything about everything else about it. Japan, I follow a couple companies there. One is Japan Gold. They're kind of, it's interesting what they're doing there, and the other one is Irving Resources. It's very interesting what they're coming up with there. The Irving Resources one may be a bit better. The share structure is very, very tight, but I'm not invested in either one of them. I know Japan Gold, the management was buying some shares up about 6 months ago, but the share price has taken quite a big hit, like many other of the junior share prices have been lately. But I really haven't looked in Asia that much, no.
Okay. Nick, you had some questions about share structure and what to look for in a junior explorer?
Yes. As Bill mentions, I think that share structure is something worth diving a little deeper into, because David has rightly said tight share structure is the best way to get a huge impact on a stock that has positive news. But David, how do you feel about the difference between, we could say, a bloated share structure on its own, maybe a billion shares out or more, versus having near-term in-the-money warrants and all sorts of things that might be a little hidden? And as a side note, I feel that sometimes bloated share structure on its own, you can still make a lot of money with the discovery. And that it's not that big of an issue. Do you still feel that's a big issue on its own?
Absolutely. First of all, I'd never touch anything with a billion shares outstanding. I'm sorry. But I see what you're saying. I do have one or two positions that are that have share structures that are higher than I would like. But the reason why I do is because the ownership is very solid. The retail float is very low, and I'm very familiar with the people who own the shares in one particular one, Minorum Gold, and I've done very well with that one. They do have a lot of shares outstanding, but the retail float is only 15%. So if you've got a really low retail float, you can get away with a higher share structure if you're very familiar with who owns those shares. And you know they're not going to be selling them anytime soon.
The low float is a great point, and I'll just add that so many of the companies I look at are ASX listed in Australia, and for whatever reason they are so open to bloated share structures.
Oh yeah,
and
they
it
are.
Just happens all over the place. But I've seen various discoveries do quite well. And not have anything like weird warrants and options. So mm-hmm. It does work, but again, I don't disagree at all with David's comments on this. I just think you could still do well occasionally. With the
oh, you can, but the odds are against you. Mm-hmm. There's one that I'm sure you're aware of. I think it's Royal Road or Golden Road, the Australian one.
Gold Road.
Gold Road, yeah. They have a very bloated share structure, yes. And they're doing quite well.
David, you presented at the Vancouver Resource Investment Conference recently, where you advised on how you'd put together a portfolio if you had $100,000 to invest, and you recommended putting $30,000 of the $100,000 into three different growth-oriented gold producers. Mm-hmm. And so my question is in regards to how you allocate. You allocate a lot more to early-stage exploration and developers over growth-oriented producers. Could you describe a little your rationale, why you organize your portfolio that way?
Sure. It's high risk, high reward. The earlier stage greenfields explorers are very high risk, but they're very high reward. That's why I allocated $25,000 to that, I think it was, and into five different companies. The growth-oriented producers I associate with lower risk, and I believe you need to if you're going to have a high-risk portfolio, you need to have a lower-risk base for that high-risk portfolio. There are a few growth-oriented producers, which I really, really like, and I think it's a good time to invest in those, because I feel they're very undervalued, that the right ones are very undervalued right here. Because we're seeing the gold price really, really I'm sorry, we're seeing the miners really, really become very undervalued in relation to the gold price. I mean, in 2017, in January, the gold price was under 1,200, and we have a gold price of over 1,300 now, and the GDX is trading at the same price it was at that time.
What about royalty companies, gold royalty companies? I've followed your newsletter. That's not something you hit on a lot. Is there a reason why, or what's your sentiment towards royalty companies?
I just feel there's not a lot of growth potential there for as far as 5-10 baggers potential in a royalty company. You know, they're very, very low risk, so they're gonna slowly move higher like a turtle, not like a hare.
So it doesn't give you the upside that you're looking for.
Right, doesn't really give me that upside I'm looking for. And I can tell you another asset class that I'm not particularly fond of, and that's prospect generators. I really don't like that model. Many of them have a lot of properties that are substandard, and if they do get lucky and hit on something, they don't control 100% of the project.
Silver producers, that's one of my favorite type of companies and commodities to invest in. I know in our first conversation we had over a year ago that you weren't big on silver producers at that time, mm-hmm. but recently you've publicly said you like America's Silver
yes.
as a company. Can you describe your evolution, or why now do you like investing in a producer versus about a year ago when I first spoke with you?
Well, sentiment. And what's going on with silver right now? I really think it's a good idea to be a little more overweight silver right now. Silver has pretty much been left for dead. The last COT report showed less than 8% spec position in silver. That's the lowest spec, a small spec position I've seen in quite some time. The last time we had a spec position below 10% was in July and December. And after both of those positions, you had the silver price move up quite substantially in the next 2 months. So I think silver is very close to a very nice move here. I would think that it would drag gold higher with it, but first I do see the gold price going below 1,300 into the next FOMC meeting on the 21st.
Nick, do you have any more questions about jurisdiction or share structure?
Yeah, one that on jurisdiction is a little more specific. Because I believe David's pretty interested in Idaho right now. Mm-hmm. And I was looking into Midas Gold, MAX, and I just found it crazy that I think the permitting process has already been 1 or 2 years, and there's another 2 years or maybe yeah. 3 years. And so I was just wanted your take, and you actually mentioned an interesting comparison, Orzone and Burkina Faso. Is this something you think much about, where in a safer jurisdiction with Midas in Idaho, sometimes the permitting can take forever and there can be issues there, versus something like Orzone and Burkina, where you have the social risks, but the permitting could be quite quick and move forward. Do you have any commentary about how much that comes into play in your thought process, and maybe Idaho specifically?
Sure. Well, you mentioned Midas. I'm not a very, very big Midas Gold fan because it's pretty much an optionality play, and B, because it's going to take 3 years to permit, even though the permitting process is going to be substantially better, I believe, under this new administration. It's funny. Also, you mentioned Idaho because I just got through talking with Hugh Argo and of the CEO of Revival, and I just got through speaking with Integra Resources as well, which I'm a shareholder in both. But as far as Burkina Faso is concerned, I mean, it's very easy to fast track a mine there. I mean, I think they've opened 9 mines in the past 10 years or so. So yes, but like I said, the mining tax rate has risen there now that they have a democratically elected president and not a dictator. It's funny that kind of happened that way, but it's become less mining friendly now that they have a democratically elected government. But anyway, I digress. But as far as Idaho is concerned, you touched on Idaho. I really like that jurisdiction very much. I even like it better than Nevada right now, because I believe Nevada has pretty much been picked over. I know it's one of the best mining jurisdictions in the world, and I do have some I do have some holdings that have some exposure in Nevada. I'm not poo-pooing it. I'm just saying that it's pretty much been picked over, and Idaho has not. Idaho was left for dead by majors for quite some time. These two companies, which I just mentioned, have picked up some two brownfields projects that are very highly prospective, and they have very good share structures, and they have very good management teams.
Very interesting thoughts. I'm glad you seem to be the most on top of Idaho of anyone I've talked to.
Well, thank you.
David, in terms of timing the bottom of where we're at with gold before we really start to see a strong push upward, I've heard you mention that if the GDX goes to a certain place, that you would take a position in JNUG.
Yes.
So could you talk about positioning in JNUG? Why would you do that? What are you looking for? And then my follow-up question is, how long do you plan on holding JNUG?
Well, I'm glad you asked that question, really. First of all, I rarely mess with these 3x ETFs. They're highly speculative and very risky. I mean, it's very difficult to make money in these things. So when I do take a position, it's when it's at a low risk opportunity. And I believe we're setting up to have a final capitulation after this 20-month consolidation ends. I believe that is a very real possibility. And if it does happen, that would be the ideal time to take a position in something like JNUG. If you took a position in JNUG on January 17th, when we had the last capitulation move, after a six-month consolidation in that sector, then JNUG is the GDXJ 3x exposure to that. But if you took it when that happened, The GDX went up 180% in 6 months, and the JNUG, which is associated with the GDXJ, went from $8 to I believe it was $137 in 6 months. So I would take a small 2% position in JNUG if this setup occurs again, and I would hold on to it until it becomes very overbought. So from oversold to overbought, because if this setup does happen, this will be the alarm bell saying that all the weak hands are out now. They're done. I'm finished with gold miners. I'm done. I never want to see them again. This sector sucks. I'm out. And that's when you want to buy a 3x ETF.
Regarding your what you're picking up on in investor sentiment here at PDAC, you mentioned pre-recording that you haven't been able to scout out new companies, but at least in the day and a half since we've been here, what are you picking up both from management teams and investors? And I'll just give you this. I was talking to a CEO of a gold exploration company yesterday, and he described the mood towards gold as bearish from his vantage point. What are you picking up on as you're here?
Well, I'm picking up on, so far, it's only been a day and a half, but I think I can echo that sentiment. Last year, it was a lot more upbeat than it is this year. I do have to say that. But unfortunately, I've yet been able to walk the floor. I take a day usually to walk the floor to see if I can find some new opportunities. I've only been able to catch up with the companies so far, with the companies that I am invested in, to get updates for my subscribers. So unfortunately, I haven't had that walkthrough day yet. So you might want to ask me that question later.
Any particular events that you've attended or plan to attend, whether there's, you know, sessions or, you know, some of the after party stuff that you'd like to comment on?
I haven't done any sessions yet. I really haven't planned on going to them. There was a few sessions that I saw yesterday, but unfortunately, I didn't get a chance to get to them. I do that every time I come to this thing. I have this set agenda where, I'm going to do this. I'm going to do that. And it's just so overwhelming. I'm happy if I can speak to all the companies that I'm invested in CEO, then I'm happy with that. That's my main goal. And then if I have time to look around, or if I hear something from somebody that I really respect that tells me to go look at something, that's been successful for me before, and I'll go look at it and I'll go talk to them and go, oh, wow, they're right. This does look good. So I just haven't been able to do that. I haven't mm-hmm. heard any rumors yet from some people that I really respect to tell me to go see something yet. So again, like I told Bill, if you want to ask me that question later, I'll be glad to answer it.
David, this is a question that came up last night when Nick and I were speaking to some other individuals, and it's, if you know something is a mining scam, would you still invest in it knowing you could profit off of the stock? What's your take on
that? Would I invest in Northern Dynasty? No, never. No, I would not. I wouldn't, especially now that I run a service, there's no way I would ever recommend a stock that is a scam to a subscriber. I'm sorry, I wouldn't be able to sleep at night. I can't do that.
You live in California.
Mm-hmm.
Rick Rule lives in California. There's many resource investors in California.
Mm-hmm.
I've always had this question. I live mm-hmm. in Michigan, so Nick, David, and myself are all
U.S. It's a bit colder there.
It is a bit colder. You might have me on climate, but I have you on taxes.
That's which right,
is
you
my,
do.
Which is my question.
You do, which is why we pay those high taxes for that climate.
So how do you deal with not only the federal government taxation as U.S. citizens, but in terms of short-term gains and long-term gains, California's taxation system? Are you set up in Delaware, or do you pay your taxes in California?
No. If the IRS is listening, I'm not set up in Delaware, if that's a trick question. but seriously, since I have this business, I'm able to write more off, and so I don't really pay that much taxes, really. It's something that I can really deal with. Before I had the business and before I started a family recently, I was traveling around the world. And when I chose to do that, I set up my residence in Washington State before I did. That helped out a bit. So I'm not going to pay taxes in a state that I'm not living in. So that's why I did that. But the tax issue really hasn't been that much of a problem for me. It's worth it to pay a little higher taxes, like I said, to live where my family lives and where I didn't have to turn on my heater until about 3 weeks ago.
Well, David, before you go, we appreciate your time. Do you have any concluding remarks you'd like to leave with the mining stock investors that are listening?
Just this is the best time to be looking for things. And if you have the time and you really want to be a serious investor into this sector, you need to come to these conferences. You need to talk to these managements in person, and you need to ask them the pertinent, serious questions that you need to know the answers to in person. It makes so much difference. And just stay patient, stay vigilant, and spread out your risk as much as you possibly can.
For the listener that's wanting to learn more about David's subscription service, you can go to juniorminerjunkie.com, and I highly recommend it. I actually recommended it to an individual this morning. Not only do you get to be introduced to companies that David himself is investing in, he gives you the reasons behind, and this is actually the feature of your service that I like best. When I find my own companies and research them, then I email David and I say, David, what are your thoughts? Therefore, you get a professional opinion on what your thoughts are, and then David's always responds within a day in email, in writing, giving you his thoughts for or against, you know, the idea I'm thinking about. So it really is a service not only to learn potential investments, but you also get feedback directly from David. And so, David, thank you for joining me today.
Thank you very much, Bill. It was great.
And Nick?
Thanks, Bill. It was a pleasure interviewing David. I recommend wholeheartedly that he's one of the best people to follow as a newer investor in the industry.
Thanks, Nick.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to this Mining Stock Education podcast. Please subscribe and share with like-minded investors. Visit us on the web at miningstockeducation.com for more resources on precious metals and natural resource investing. At our website, you can also sign up for our free newsletter for interview transcripts, stock picks, and more. This podcast is for informational purposes only and is not to be considered personal legal or investment advice or a recommendation to buy or sell securities or any other product. We make every effort to be accurate, but the information presented is not to be considered infallible. It may contain errors, and we offer no inferred or explicit warranty. If personal advice is needed, consult a qualified legal, tax, or investment professional. Do not base any investment decision on the information contained on MiningStockEducation.com, our podcasts, or videos. Make sure you always conduct your own thorough due diligence before investing. Realize that we may hold equity positions in or be compensated by some of the companies we feature and therefore are biased and hold an obvious conflict of interest. For our full disclaimer, please visit our website.